morning, everyone. Good evening, good afternoon, wherever you are, and welcome to this week's weekly energy boost. My name is Elisheva, and I am here this lovely Monday morning with David. And today's episode is the third. Actually, I was going to say it's all about love. It is all about love. This whole month is about love. And we're focusing specifically this week on unconditional love. However, we have over the last couple of weeks been so bombarded with questions. I wanted to make sure that we give some time to those questions, because one of the things about love, and this is really the reason that we're focusing on it this month, is that there are all these different things, cosmic energies. I mean, I'm reading things every day, and that cosmic energy phrase sounds a little bit woo-woo, but a lot of astrologers, spiritual leaders, even, you know, you can look in the biblical portion of each week, and you can see the influence. Really, our lives are walking examples of what the predictions are. And the predictions are funny, because I don't actually like to look at that kind of stuff. I don't open up Vogue magazine and say, you know, what's my horoscope today? I'm a Pisces, and this month I should stay in bed. But rather, the fact that we're compelled to experience life this week and these last few weeks as challenging our perceptions of love, our experiences of love. I can tell you, for me personally, I've had, not only because I'm sitting and preparing for every episode, but also in my own life, rethinking how I express my love to others. One of the things that I realized, and this is really, I think it is connected to today's episode, today's topic, is that, you know, what you feel in your heart doesn't really matter if you don't express it. And, you know, last week I told the story about the guy who loves fish, right? What does he love about fish? How it tastes, how it feels in his mouth, you know, how it nourishes his body. That's not really love, that's need. Today, in addition to answering our listeners' questions, we're going to talk about, what does it mean to truly love another person? What does it mean to be one with them? And even though last week we talked about why it's so important to have love for others and to make the effort to be in a monogamous relationship, to seek that out, at the same time, there are opportunities 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to express love in ways that maybe we don't think of as expressing love. So we want to talk about that today as well. David, you want to say anything before we get into the questions?
I'm excited to hear the questions. I did want to share one thought about, sounds cliche, but about loving yourself. And there are things that we do that cause us to be hard on ourselves and to, quote, hate ourselves. And that's what's stopping us from loving ourselves. I know it sounds so simple, but people are always like trying to, oh, how do I love myself? Forget about trying to love yourself. Work on not hating yourself. And automatically, what will happen is like the true soul shines. And so that love or that energy starts to come through when you focus on cleansing the negative aspects of what you're doing. And I'll just give you one example, and then we can get to the questions. We can share more examples throughout the episode. Whenever you try to achieve too much, so you try to think about the future, about maybe who you need to become or what you need to achieve in your work or with your family or with your kids, and you try to think of, well, how do I do all that? And you try to do all of that all at once, or try to get to a spiritual level too quickly, or you try to become too successful too quickly, or anything too quickly, the natural result of that is you will be hard on yourself, and then you will hate yourself. And as a result, you won't love yourself. So that is one thing that we all do that perpetuates self-hatred, which prevents self-love, which then creates that vicious cycle. So the secret to loving yourself is acknowledging and finding the things that you do that are causing you to be hard on yourself. And one of them is trying to do too much too quickly, too fast and not letting the creator's timeline unfold.
Well, what's interesting is one of the questions that we got, and I see it actually here again in the live feed, is how do we practice unconditional love while still maintaining, here the question is, healthy boundaries. Mm-hmm. But I think in the question we got on earlier this week was without losing yourself, which to me is an expression of not having boundaries. And I wrote down for myself five ways to practice unconditional love. We can go over. I know you're usually the one with the list. I have my list this week. But I think that part of that, you know, we intentionally started this conversation with loving ourselves first, because that is Kabbalistically the first step to creating a being able to give love. One has to love the equipment. I don't mean equipment, physical equipment. You have to have, you can't pour from an empty cup, right? So if you don't have that reservoir of, I know who I am, I love what I am, I am a conduit of the light force of the creator, then you can give that to others. Then you can create that circuitry that we spoke about last week with other people. The idea of having boundaries, and we have spoken about this so many times in different ways, is that sometimes the most loving thing you can do for someone is to have boundaries. How many of us, I'm sure many of us, have had loved ones that have unhealthy habits, addictions, maybe gambling, drugs. There's no, I could go on with the list, right? And the most loving thing to do in that case is sometimes to cut them off or to stop giving them the money, the support, the couch to crash on, because sometimes a person does need to hit rock bottom in order to make a change for themselves. So unconditionally loving is not giving whatever you have until you don't have it anymore. It's not, I give my love no matter how I'm treated, no matter what is done to me in return. It is loving not for the sake of what I'm going to receive in return. And that's why sometimes loving means saying no, saying stop it, saying you can't have this anymore, because that's really the, I'm willing to sit in the discomfort of the other person is upset with me, the other person is angry at me, I may not hear from the other person anymore, but I love them so much, I'm willing to do what's best for them, regardless of how I feel about it. And I think that that's, maybe the perception is that unconditional love is, I'm a doormat, take whatever you need, I don't care, there's no conditions to my love. No, the opposite. That I have healthy boundaries in place. I know what is okay and what is not okay with me. But my lack of conditions comes from the, I am going to love because it's my opportunity for me to express my true essence. That may, I think we talked about it a couple months ago, people often look at the world around them and they say, well, there's so much darkness in the world, how can there be a God? Why would God allow X, Y, and Z? And we were talking about how we equate God, the creator, the light, the infinite force of giving and sharing to be constant pleasure. But the infinite force of giving and sharing, the omnipotent force that's behind the universe, is trying to push us to our best selves. And sometimes it doesn't feel good to be pushed into that place. So sometimes unconditionally loving the other person means being uncomfortable, means having a broken heart and knowing that even though your heart hurts, you're helping the other person more than they can even help themselves. So today we really want to sort of spin everything we know about love to an angle in which we understand it's not the nice thing to do, it's not the right thing to do, it's not the fun thing to do. It is the greatest expression of our true essence, which is our soul.
So to play devil's advocate here, I hear what you're saying, and a lot of people, I know what you're saying. I feel I know what you're saying, and I'm just trying to see now from our audience's point of view. person says, okay, yeah, just set boundaries. Now you love yourself. Well, how does it, when your tikkun, when your soul's correction is the confusion around how to set boundaries, or the lack of self-love is because you don't set boundaries. Well, I mean, if everybody knew how to set boundaries, they would, because it is kind of confusing. Well, when do I draw the line? When do I say yes? When do I say no? Is it coming from the creator? Is it coming from the opponent? And the confusion is what causes people to stay stuck. So how do we unravel that confusion? Because eventually we have to kind of go back, peel this onion and go to its core. What do I got to do to even know how to set a boundary? Because that solving that question is what will unlock the mystery of this episode.
Okay. Are you asking me?
I'm asking you.
Okay. So in my experience, one of the easiest ways to figure out where you don't have boundaries is to think about what are you angry and resentful over?
Okay. And I'm following here. So okay. I write down, where am I angry and resentful? And I'm writing it down.
I am angry and resentful that my family, my friends always wait for me to make plans.
Okay. So I want everybody who's listening, instead of just passively listening, try to actively listen and think of an area, because I'm going to do this. This is not planned. I'm going to do this exercise with Elisheva, and I want everybody to do it with us as you're listening. So think of a place right now where you're angry or resentful. And if you can't write it down, just you scribble it down in your brain, and let's follow this example. So, all right. So we all have this area where we feel angry and resentful. Okay, great. Next.
The question to ask is, what's my responsibility in the creation of that situation? So for going with my example, which I'm thinking of somebody who brought this to a meeting very recently with me, they realized through the blessing of 2020 that if they don't reach out to their friends, they don't hear from them. Mm-hmm. So what was the conclusion? Nobody loves me. Nobody cares about me, etc.
Okay.
We broke it down a little bit and we realized that in being the party planner, the initiator, the person who always contacts and makes things happen, she set a precedent. She demolished a boundary. She basically told her circle of friends, I will take care of it. I am self-reliant. I am the cruise director of our friend group. And you don't need to do anything. So there is a boundary that's being the place to put the boundary is, this friendship is a two-way street. This friend group is a collaboration. But she has set the precedent that she doesn't have that boundary, that she is in charge. She's going to initiate. Now, I even use the word initiator. That might sound like it's the right thing to do. I am the cause of my friend group getting together. Isn't that a spiritual thing, Elisheva? And the answer is, it's only spiritual if it takes spiritual effort from you to make it happen. If it is what's easy for you, what's comfortable for you, what's natural for you, then it is not revealing the light it can. So her response was, forget about it. I have no friends. I'm just going to ignore them and they're not even going to call me back. And, you know, I have to find a whole new group of friends. When I challenged her with the idea that what if the solution is not find a new group of friends, but instead ask who wants to get together and who's going to plan it and whose house is it at, and not take it all on herself to be the, I don't know, cruise director is the one that sounds the best to me, to really be the one who organizes all the activity of this group. Shoot.
Okay. So, I hope everybody followed that.
David can't relate because he doesn't have a friend group of girls that want him to make plans
for them.
Going on a cruise ship.
So, no, I'm just trying to think here, because I was going to approach this from a different way, but I...
So approach it. People want to hear both. There isn't one answer to any question.
No, but your answer is correct also. You know what? Let's do it this way, because I was having this question, because I talk to students a lot, and in my mind, I'm like, well, yeah, just do that, right? And then they're like, what do you mean? Or yeah, or I'll come to the conclusion, and they're like, oh, I see. But my thing is, why didn't they come to that conclusion themselves? Right? We want to all become self-sustaining channels of our own personal transformation. And unless you have kind of a teacher or a mentor, which everybody needs to have, showing you another perspective, people get stuck. Can you all relate with me that you get stuck all of a sudden with what you need to do with yourself? I mean, me and Alisha get stuck when it comes to our own tikkun, our own correction. When it comes to our students, we see clearly, we get an idea, we get a message, but how do we get messages for ourselves? This was my conundrum, by the way, I've been having for a while, because ultimately we got to get everybody not to be reliant on other people in general, and to have that relationship with the Creator themselves. And when I was on this, I was on a retreat in Connecticut at, we have a little retreat place, a home. One of the things is that all the books that was in Karen Berg's house here in LA, they transferred the books to this home. So I was kind of bored. It was a Saturday. I was kind of bored. I was looking through the library and I just, some book, like I forgot even what it was called. I just picked some book off the shelf and I started reading it. And I realized that it was a spiritual book, very Kabbalistic, but not necessarily a Kabbalah book. But it was kind of like a scientific way of looking at Kabbalah, and it really fascinated me. And they wrote something scientifically, how to solve this problem, which I found very fascinating, and I'm going to try to say it in a succinct way for the amount of time we have now. But the idea was that if all of our souls are connected, and there's a term for this, Kabbalistically it's called Shekhinah, which comes from the word Shochem, which means to dwell. It's almost like there's a collective soul that all of our souls are part of. And well, bottom line is you need to know that all of our souls are somehow connected. So scientifically, they were saying, and this is backed by what we teach in Kabbalah 1, that if someone is coming into your movie, we used to always say, well, if they bother you, it's something exists within you. But it goes even deeper. If someone is entering your vicinity with whatever challenge or negativity, it also means that you have this and you have the responsibility or the ability to cleanse it by shining like a light on it. And it was very simple because, for example, if I'm, let's say a student calls me and says, you know, I'm having trouble with my daughter. Now, I'm not having trouble with my daughter. She's having trouble with her daughter. But I need to end this phone call and say, you know, I'm having trouble with my daughter, even if I don't have a daughter. And I need to inject positive words, positive energy, positive affirmations. There's Kabbalistic tools we use for this as well. But let's say you don't know any of the Kabbalistic tools, even saying something like, I'm sorry, or I love you, like that. It's just the words of love, because we're talking, this show is all about love, because that is the Creator's main force. And I'm just injecting that energy. What the scientists were saying is that you actually remove that darkness and open up from that person that you just spoke to. Almost like the Creator sent them to you to by you opening it up inside yourself, you open it up inside of them. You know, it's funny. 20 years of studying Kabbalah, this is what we teach, obviously. I just needed to hear it from a scientific. They showed how what happens in the brain and all these different things when you do that also. So it helped me understand it on a much deeper level. But when you do that, then you start to feel good. You feel the energy inside yourself. And then that opens up how to set boundaries. That opens up how to make decisions. And that opens up so on and so forth. So I don't know if that was too convoluted, but I wanted to share something that I've been practicing. I feel like I saw this book, which I now need to go back and find out what it was, because I spent, you know, some time reading it when I was in Connecticut. The Creator showed me that book. It's a question I had. I picked it off the shelf. For whatever reason, divine wisdom was there. And it opened up a whole new layer of understanding, Kabbalistic wisdom, of how to love yourself. Clearing out those memories, those painful memories, simply by shining a light on it, saying, I love this. We teach this in Kabbalah 1. We say, pause, you know, pause, what a pleasure, or pause, thank you. We're shining light on this negativity, and that's how we cleanse it.
Well, that's also the essence of unconditional love, right? Unconditional love, when you love someone else unconditionally, you see the best in them, but you also see the worst, and you love them anyway. And so, to me, that's also about when we see the darkness, we understand the purpose of it is for the light anyway, and that's why we power through. We know that there is a diamond at the end of the process, and we look at the other people in our lives that way as well. And of course, that's not easy. I don't want to sound sadistic, but we're not here for easy. We came here to do work. The work, however, is much more about the willingness than it is actually the difficult, uncomfortable situations. And we probably don't talk about that enough, but it really is. We say often that the key to everything is really intention. What that means is that I'm willing to go through, to cross the sea, to go through, what do you call it when you're on the rapids and there's like a waterfall, there's a drop, you know, you're willing to go, if there's going to be a drop, you're willing to go down with everybody, but you really don't have to. And it's that willingness that creates the magic, the power in overcoming whatever challenges you have in your relationships, whether it's a lack of a relationship or a difficult relationship. It's our willingness to do the uncomfortable work that really brings the magic.
So what are some of the questions that you had from our listeners?
So we had another question that came up that I can also look at the feed because I wrote down a bunch of them. One of them was about finding love in the golden years. And why bother finding...
Define the golden years for
like, you know, Social Security and onward, I guess. What? 65 and older? She told me how old she was. She said she's 71.
Golden years.
She's 71. And she was asking, why bother? What's in it for her? They're, you know, they don't need to create a family anymore.
She already had kids.
She wasn't married. She's not anymore. I didn't ask why or how, but the question came out. First of all, I gave some positive reinforcement there, but I think that I would love to hear from you as well. You know, bearing in mind, we did talk about it last week, that the purpose of a relationship is not, even when you're 25, it's not so that you can have kids and live a legacy. Kabbalistically, that's not the reason to be in a partnership, in a relationship with someone. The reason is because that's the most powerful way for us to act like the creator, capital C. It's not about, you know, if you want to do the work that your soul came to do, you will invite in someone who can see you completely and fully to be able to help you do that work and to help them do that work. So doesn't matter. Age is not a factor. Age is a demarcation of chronological time and doesn't... I shared with another student of mine that I heard someone my age, their mom has a new boyfriend and it's the love of her life and he's never seen her so happy. And that to me, she's in her 70s also. And that to me is a reason to be open to a relationship, right? The willingness, again, I'm going to go back to that word willingness, which comes from the word will, which is about desire. The desire to take the risk and to be vulnerable and to open ourselves up to that is a big part of the game of life. You want to win, you have to take the risk. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take, including in relationships, right?
So the question is, what exactly? Does this person need to be in a relationship? What does this person need to do? What is the exact question? As you see it.
Why bother being in a relationship if you're quote unquote done? That was kind of how she put it to
right,
me.
Right, right. So we probably need to veer away from this idea of I need to do something, I'm supposed to do something.
For sure.
I don't know if we gave that impression that a person's supposed to be in a relationship. Ultimately...
No, we were very clear last week. It's about the desire. Whether or not a person is in the relationship is not in their hands wholly,
right,
fully.
Right.
But it's important to have the desire because the desire is where the work is, not the actual...
Yes, yes.
That's the opportunity.
Yes. I would say it's hard to speak about this when you're not in your golden years.
David's going to use that a lot this week, I can tell.
I try not to say things that I'm not experiencing or have experienced, but having students who have, I would say, you know, my default safe answer here is, because, yeah, you know what, I'm speaking about this with a couple of students who are of that age, and I think every time I speak to them, I'm just gauging, you know, are you fulfilled? Are you happy? why not, why yes, and letting them have a deeper relationship with the Creator so that they feel guided. And obviously similar pain points come up for people who are older, and there's fears that come up. But this was a big fear I heard a lot, that you start to see a lot of your friends dying. This was something someone told me. I think she was 60. She said it just hit her that all of a sudden so many of her friends are getting sick, or this one's dying, or this one, and it's a wake-up call. So obviously that can bring up a lot of fear. And no matter what age you are, when you have fear, this is an opportunity that only your soul can do to bring light into that, and not to live your life from that fear, from that darkness, from that memory. Because all fears are memories from past lives that haven't been cleansed. And when we hold on to those memories, the memories become the guiding light, which then leads us down the wrong path, versus the divine inspiration of the Creator being the guiding light. And I think that kind of summarizes it. There's two forces that will guide you. It's your memories, your painful memories from your what we call your tikkun, your correction from past life and this life. And most people, 99% of people, make decisions based on that. That's why a pause breaks that pattern and shifts you to the divine. So there's a voice, there's a message, there's a pathway that the Creator speaks to people. And regardless of what age you are at, you should always be looking to be spoken to through that channel. And if you don't know which channel is talking to you, you just keep cleansing. You keep pausing. You keep cleansing. You keep going.
What does cleansing mean, David?
So cleansing, how do you cleanse something? When you say it's good. As soon as you say it's good, you actually cleanse it. Because what are we trying to clean? We're trying to clean something that's bad. And it's dark. And when you shine a light on it, or when you say it's good, or when you inject certainty into it, these are all qualities of the light, you actually shine the light. This is why Kabbalah 1, Class 1, is so powerful, because it's pause, and then shine, and then acknowledge it. Have certainty in it. Appreciate it. Even if you have to fake it, you are now cleansing that negativity immediately on a soul level. And then the voice of the light of the Creator shines through automatically. It doesn't even happen like a second later. It's instantaneous. So that's what cleansing means. As soon as you accept something, you cleanse it. As soon as you appreciate something, you cleanse any negativity around it.
Well, by the way, I'm just looking at my list. We've already covered a bunch of the points without directly trying to cover them. The first point was love yourself despite your flaws.
Okay.
Which we covered in, you know, part of unconditionally loving others means unconditionally loving yourself, right? Every diamond starts out as a piece of coal. And Kabbalah, the Kabbalists repeat over and over and over again, you are not your flaws. You are not your mistakes. You are not your misjudgments. You are a pure spark of the light force of the Creator. And it's loving that helps us to awaken that unconditional love. Number two, which we also talked about in the first episode, is to take care of yourself, body, mind, and spirit. Right? It's very difficult to love, to give love, to act from a loving place when you're depleted, when you haven't set up those healthy boundaries, which we started to talk about at the beginning of the show. Those boundaries actually ensure that you do have the energy, the thoughtfulness, the compassion that unconditional love requires. So it sounds funny. The first two, even though unconditional love seems like it needs to be expressed in the world, it's actually, if you don't first express it in your inner world, it's not going to come out right. And the third one I'm going to go to, and then I have a question on it, so I want to talk about that as well. The third one is to let go of attachment. And that maybe resonates with most people when they hear the word unconditional, right? It's only natural that we get too attached to the things in our lives. Sometimes they're material things like money and cars and houses, but sometimes there are expectations and our pride and our plans, and we know that we get attached to those things because we can't let them go, right? So we have a question from a listener who's asking, how do you let go? If the thing that you most desire is to fall in love and have a family in a loving way, not just to, I think what she was implying is that she knows that she can go medically to have a child on her own, but her dream is to have a partner and create a family together. Sure. How can she both desire that and let go of it? Because we talk a lot about letting go. Mm-hmm. And I felt that, I think also in this episode about unconditional love, unconditional is, as we're talking about here, I'm not attached to how it happens. Mm-hmm. I'm not attached to who it's with. Mm-hmm. I'm not attached to when it happens. But at the same time, it is still one of my deepest desires.
So what's the question?
How do you be in both places of I want it and I'm willing to let it go? Because in what I understood is she's not willing to let it go. She wants it. She's not, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And we're talking here about letting go of attachments, right? When we do let go of the attachments, what we're basically doing on a meta level is we're telling the creator, we know the creator knows better what should happen than we do.
Yeah.
That's really the one of the most important parts of the broadcast that happens when you let go is that when I'm attached to what I want, I'm saying I know better.
Mm-hmm.
When I let go, I think the question is, how do you desire it and let it go at the same time? That sounds like a contradiction.
It sounds like a contradiction when you're trying to solve it as a contradiction. Think of areas in your life that you desire it, but you're also, kind of think of how the body works. The body is doing like a trillion.
Oh, here we go. Digestion metaphor of the week.
I'm not going to go to the digestion. I'm not going to go to the colon. All right. We're not going to the colon.
What other parts of our body knows how to let go, David?
There are a trillion things happening in our body simultaneously, but obviously we desire them to happen. We desire that the body performs in this beautiful, magical way. But I'm not having anxiety. It's happening naturally because I want it to happen, but I'm also not attached to it. And there's probably other areas of a person's life that things are happening naturally where obviously you desire it to happen, but you're not attached to it. You're also confident in its outcome. When you overthink something and you overanalyze something, that's when you start to bring the satan into it. I was the negative forces. That's what I told somebody this week. Very simple. When you're overthinking something, it means you've already brought negativity to it. It's thinking about it all the time. That's the problem. That's how you know you're in the wrong zone, the tree of knowledge, good and evil, not the tree of life. When you're thinking about something too much, it means the light can't, you're micromanaging it. And so the light of the creator steps away.
Okay, you got this. I can go do other things.
Huh? Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it's kind of like, how do I put max effort in without pushing the creator out? Obviously, we need to take care of ourselves, our physical body. But when our mind, because it's really when it comes down to the mind is consumed by something, you're then banging your head on a wall to try to make something happen, but the creator can't come in. So how do I do my max, but know when to get out of the way to allow all the other forces to have synergy and make a manifestation happen? And finding that beautiful balance is the art of spirituality.
How do you stop those thoughts when they keep coming?
How do you stop? So I don't think it's about stopping the thoughts that are coming, but the thoughts come from a place of desire. So if you look at the hierarchy of spiritual cause and effect, it starts with my tikkun, my correction. So this is like a past life memory that then triggers a desire. So for example, let's say past life I was hurt, somebody left me. So I'll have a desire when I see someone that I want them to like me. And I don't even know why I desire that, but it just comes. And then I'll have thoughts of how to get this person to like me. So a thought, I'll be bombarded by thoughts. Oh, I should dress a certain way. I should say this. I should be important. I should go be successful and come back to this person. And then all these thoughts come. And then after that, then the free will is pretty much gone because you'll just live your life in an action mode to become successful, to then eventually have this person like you to satisfy that memory. So how do you stop the bombardment of thoughts? Go back a step. Let's go back to the desire. What am I desiring right now? Well, I'm desiring this person to like me. Let's let go of that desire. Let's basically realize that I want something even bigger than that. I don't want just this person to like me. I want to I want something greater than this. I want the light of the Creator, and this is the relationship with the Creator. So then the thoughts shift. Mm-hmm. And the type of thoughts that come to you is not, how do I get this girl to like me? But the thoughts are, well, how can I be more like the Creator? But because we live in a community of 7 billion people who are all thinking about, how do I get people to like me? It's very hard. So people, you'll listen to this episode and you'll be like, oh yes, you know what? I do want to be with the light. And you'll feel it because you're listening to it right now and you're connecting to its energy. But you're going to step back into the 7 billion people who are just thinking, how do I get you to like me? And that's a very powerful aura of light to have to compete with. So I fall into it all the time. I'm sitting here, I'm in a conversation with you. Yeah, all I want is the light of the Creator. As soon as I step out there, get into the emails and the phone calls and whatnot, all we're thinking about is how do I make this happen? How do I make that happen? How do I? And it's very hard to be in both worlds. And that is the power of why we're here. To achieve this balance is our task. So that is how I would solve the to achieve a level of simplicity in the mind, is to go back to, what's my desire here, and how do I shift that to be a pure desire?
I think that leads us to point number 4, which is diminish the ego.
Okay.
Okay, because our ego is that part of us that tells us, I deserve that girl, or I'm a good person, so I've earned these things in return.
Yeah.
This should be happening to me. That shouldn't be happening to me. That's mm-hmm. the ego. Mm-hmm. And it also blinds us to the parts of us that we can improve, right? I've arrived already, or it doesn't make sense. Why am I alone? Or why am I being treated this way? Mm-hmm. So when we set our consciousness, like David said, on connecting to the Creator and being more in that space of I want what the light wants, which is, I'm not saying it's easy, but it's definitely a better vibe than I want you to like me. Mm-hmm. We're also able to see more clearly those moments. And I challenge you guys to think about the last time that you were in might be a long time for a lot of us, but a social situation in which we were trying to get attention or validation or acknowledgement, and how you felt when you did or did not get it. That's not you. That's the ego, right? It's so funny because I hear myself. I sound like a broken record. But the part of us, right? I talk to people all the time, as you hear often in our shows. We share our conversations with people. And I spoke with someone yesterday that she was telling me that she really just wants her husband to just admit she is the best. She is awesome. She is the heroic. And she's making herself a martyr to get that title
from her husband.
Right.
So I would in that moment go to the place of, why do I need my husband to feel this way? There's some kind of pain I have from past life and this life. I want to heal that right now with my own power. I want to acknowledge that I am okay. I want to say it over and over again that I am okay, and that I don't have pain, that I'm with the light, and convince myself of it over and over again. And then you're done. So whatever happens with, interestingly enough, that's exactly when the husband feels the energy and starts to come forward and starts to be more whatever he needs to be. Because you also shifted now to this reality where you deserve a husband who respects you. Because people respect when they feel the light inside you. So that's a vicious cycle. I don't have the light inside me. I need you. Well, I'm not going to respect you because you don't have the light inside you.
It's the sound of the vacuum.
Oh, that's a good one.
It is. I learned it in London. I lived in London a bunch of years ago, and they used to say Energy Hoover.
Mm.
Energy Hoover.
It's good.
Hoover is a vacuum company, for those of you who don't know. But that's the moment you hear the sound, you back off. You don't want any of your energy to get sucked up into that vacuum. Mm. But yes, absolutely, for sure. And I have another question that'll lead us to the fifth point. And I really like this question because it's honest. And it's real. And if all of us were this honest, I think we'd be a lot happier. Mm. The question is, how do you love people who've deliberately hurt you?
How do you love people who've deliberately hurt you? I would start with knowing the benefit of doing so. We are all motivated by greed. So let's use greed to our advantage. If I can get to a place where I care about Oh, I want you to be happy and successful, even despite the fact that you have ruined my life.
Or attempted to ruin my life. I think the difficulty is in the feelings, not in the reality.
Whatever that may be. If I can achieve this, the reward is so great. It's greater than anything else I try to jimmy myself, you know, try to manipulate to get in my own life. The gates will open. The spiritual reward, which then becomes a physical reward, is so huge. I am now motivated to forgive you and love you. People do things when they know what's in it for them. That's the bottom line. Always understand that ego just means I'm chasing something that is smaller than what I'm meant to have. So getting someone to say sorry to me, which does feel good, like someone acknowledging that they hurt you, is actually smaller than the respect that the Creator wants to give you, which is the Creator wants the whole world to respect you and love you. The whole world.
But like, not that you should be doing it to get the world's respect, but it's like you want to be blessed. You want to feel the goodness of the light in your life.
Well, this is why the system is so great, because it's not like if you follow what we're saying, then the next day the whole world loves you, because then that would also defeat the purpose, because you would still be holding on to your neediness if you could see that even by using Kabbalah, immediately it worked. So Kabbalah works and doesn't work the way you want it to, just right, to make you also not feel too confident in the cause and effect. So it's kind of like in Kabbalah, you do the right thing, then you get no result, then you're forced to have certainty, and then it comes. Just enough to make it hard so that everybody doesn't do it. Because if everybody just did Kabbalah and the next day, boom, 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 all the miracles happened, I mean, geez, I mean, there's no game anymore.
But David, the way you're making it sound like we're doing it for our own benefit, it sounds a little bit selfish.
It's okay. It's this level of selfishness is okay.
I
have to give my kids candy to do what I want when they're six. But there is another level that comes after that. But we can't teach that level until we get everybody to the first level.
I'll tell you something. My answer would be different. Not that it's incorrect. But David and I are both right. I feel confident saying that. That to our material world ears, desiring blessings and light sounds selfish. But it's not.
Yeah.
The same way, you know, if I'm not in a dark room right now, but if I were standing in a dark room holding a candle, that candle, even though it's mine, it doesn't belong. The light itself is going to shine on David and every piece of equipment in this room, regardless of the fact that they're not holding the candle. So mm-hmm. That's what the light of the Creator is like. The more light I have in my life, the brighter the world is. So I'm converting my hurt into love. Because the more that's the way to conduct the light in this world.
Right.
It's the if you will, it's the friction between the two rocks, or the match and the, I don't know what you call the thing that you
I don't strike. Know
the matchbox. Like, I don't know what you call
like,
that.
It's the teepee with.
David thinks it's easy to give like 20 classes a week and still have original content. The idea is that resistance, the fact that we're able to shift from hurt to love, is what strikes the match. That ignites the spark that lights up not only my life, but the world around me. So it is not selfish to be focused on turning on that light ever. Our opponent, that negative force within us, that the devil's advocate, so to speak, wants us to think it's selfish so that we don't step into that place of love. But stepping into that place of love, I mean, imagine that. You can be hurt, and maybe this is a good exercise for everybody else. Think about yourself when you're hurt, when you feel hurt, or when you're dwelling on something that happened in the past that hurt you. Are you exuding love, care, compassion, kindness? No, you're again, you become a vacuum. So it's to the benefit of every single person, you first and foremost, to turn that around, to shift into that place of love. And that's, you know, the fifth point on my list is share with the intention of connecting to the creator. Not because you're going to get something in return, not because, right, the unconditional love, and this is really, I'm being honest when I say this, I really look at it like this. I have the opportunity, let's say now we're going to go back home, different meetings and stuff like that. Every opportunity that I'm presented with is not a match point between me and that person. Oh, somebody needs me, now I'm going to be ahead of them. It is, I share, this is my secrets of the trade. I share and I get excited because I don't know where the return is going to come from. I just know that I want to rack up all of these points because then I'm going to have constant pleasant boomerangs coming back at me all the time. And I think last week I shared an example of something that I did with my kids in a similar respect. But it's like the goal is to have a practice of putting so much good out there that all you ever get back is good. And you're not waiting for the specific good to come from David or from the guy who you let into, right? Imagine if you every time you let someone in front of you in traffic, you expected them to do something for you in return. Now, we do. If we're honest with ourselves, we expect the wave or the thank you, and we get annoyed when the person doesn't acknowledge us. Imagine that we, as humanity, recognize that when I love, I'm not loving because I want something back from the other person. I am loving because I want that light to permeate my life and the world. There's no such thing as only I have light. And going through our relationships, our interactions with others, with that mindset, that is a game changer.
All right. I like it. Wrap it up.
So I want to read, to end this week's episode, I want to read another page from Rethink Love, which is we've been using that as our, what is it? Our springboard. Our springboard. Stop it. Our springboard for the last few weeks. And next week, we will actually have the author of the book on Weekly Energy Boost. Monica Berg will be joining us live in the studio. But I'm going to read for you from page 129, which is a section where it starts to talk about unconditional love. So what she writes here is, the purpose of love is to connect to the divine light, which is endless and more powerful than anything we can imagine. This is something to look forward to and to work toward. Love, which is based on sharing, is powerful and lasting. And the more you share, the greater your capacity to give. The difference between ego-based love and unconditional love is that the latter has the ability to grow endlessly, always creating a deeper and stronger bond. Unconditional love is not about power, wealth, or self-esteem, nor is it about what you get or do not get. To love unconditionally is to value the characteristics in a person that are a manifestation of his or her core self. The only expectations are to be heard, respected, and treated with human dignity. Unconditional love is the foundation of a happy relationship, and it is not only attainable, it is the birthright for absolutely everybody. On that note, if you are interested in reading the entirety of the book, you can go to weeklyenergyboost.com and click the link. We have a special coupon code there, 20% off for our listeners. If you already have the book, you can go to the same link and get the workbook, which is much more practical and intense, if I'm honest. But it is great work, and I have really loved jumping into it these past few weeks. We are going to speak next week, as I mentioned before, with author and change junkie Monica Berg. So you can also send your questions for Monica in advance. We're going to be talking about lots of juicy stuff, and she has, I think, coached hundreds of couples, so we'll also have her anecdotes and experiences to hear from as well. Continue to like, share, review, rate, and let us know what your questions are, what topics you'd like us to talk about, and if you have any guests you'd like to hear from. And we will see you next week on the Weekly Energy Boost.